The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. The Explorers podcast is sponsored by RM Capital, a provider of specialist small to mid-cap corporate advisory and boutique wealth management services. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perra columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. We're off to South America today, where the soon-to-list Andean Mining is working towards becoming a high-grade copper-gold producer with significant silver and zinc credits from an advanced project in Colombia. The project is called El Dovio and was picked up by Andean from a TSX-listed company that had done some serious work proving up the project's volcanogenic massive sulfide mineralization to the point where Andean gets a flying start to possibly announcing a maiden resource in calendar 2022. Now, we know many Aussie juniors have headed off to South America hoping to find billion-ton plus porphyry copper gold ore bodies, which also come with multi-billion dollar capital commitments to develop. Andean has a slightly different approach. With large scale and low grade potential is definitely on the cards at El Dovio, the company looks to be initially focusing on the potential of the VMS system to support a smaller but high grade operation. And we all know grade is said to be king in the mining game. Andean is looking to come to the market in December and is looking to raise between $6 and $7 million from its IPO. The shares will be issued at 20 cents each, and at that issue price, its market cap would range between 5.3 and 16.3 million, depending on whether it raises the 6 or 7 million. So there's a lot of leverage there to the unfolding story at El Dovio. To bring us up to speed with the Andean story, we have its well-known Managing Director and CEO, William Howe, with us today. G'day, William. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Barry. Nice to talk to you again.
Great. Now, William, I'm sure you wouldn't mind me saying that you're a veteran of the mining game, particularly the copper riches of South America. And I've said that while you're well-known, but for those who don't know of your background, a snapshot of your professional career would be great.
Yeah, I started my professional career in South Africa in the gold mining industry. Ended up coming to Australia at the end of the 80s, and in the early 1990s, I set up a company called Straits Resources Limited with a colleague of mine, Brian Rear. Mm-hmm. After Straits Resources and our foray into the copper leaching business at Gerald Ambone and building a coal mine in Indonesia, I spent some years running companies that had gold mines in Ghana, came back to Australia, spent some time operating and running Hargraves Resources, and then eventually went to South America in about 2007. And we put together a portfolio of copper assets that were in a private company and eventually backed into Metminco Limited.
Right.
So I ran Metminco from 2010 to 2018. And after that, put together this opportunity into Andean Mining Limited.
Right. Okay. So a very rich and varied background there, but with quite a few years spent in South America by the sounds of it.
Yeah. So I've spent almost 14 years in South America, and of which 4 years were spent in Colombia specifically after Andean purchased the Quintia project from Rand Merchant Bank. And advanced a feasibility study for the development of a 1,000-ton-a-day underground operation producing 50,000 ounces a year. Mm-hmm. When I left Metminco in 2018, it was merged with another private company, an Australian private company that had assets in Colombia, and eventually became known as Los Cerros, which people may know. Mm-hmm. And it's doing a lot of exploration into some large gold porphyry systems in and around the Quintia project, which I did the feasibility on.
Right. Okay. Now, Andy, in mining's flagship project, Eldovio, what's the background to the project? I mentioned it was VMS. I was just wondering how advanced it is, and was I right in suggesting a maiden resource is potentially possible next year?
Yes, so Eldovio has had substantial work done on it. There was underground development into the main structure that was explored, called Sabana Blanca. There was a lot of surface exploration work done across the VMS system, which has located a number of feeder zones and has located the main VMS horizon, although it hasn't obviously intersected into the main VMS system yet. So all the work that's been done has been done in the feeder zones, and specifically at Sabana Blanca, underground development, surface trenching and sampling, and diamond drilling into that zone, so which is identified, as you mentioned, the possibility of a larger scale, lower grade operation, which would obviously require pretty hefty capital,
mm-hmm.
or a much higher grade, lower tonnage, obviously, lenses within the stockwork system. And we've identified seven of them already. Which would sort of host a 1,000-ton type a day operation,
mm-hmm.
For something like 10 years as a starter operation. That's the focus of the company. That would be a good outcome for an initial operation at Eldovio.
Yeah, certainly a company that starts out life on the ASX with a $15 to $16 million market cap at the issue price, anyway. Okay, now we've talked about these VMS, the high-grade lenses. Just how high-grade are they showing, are they?
Well, if you look at consistently, the underground work, the surface work, and the drilling, which takes us down to a vertical distance of about 200 meters from surface, you consistently see widths of around 3 to 6 meters, which are very good widths from an underground mining point of view. And the grades are consistently... on an average basis, somewhere between 4 and 6 grams of gold, and probably about somewhere between 2.5% and 3.5% copper, plus silver and zinc. But about 95% of the value on any one day would sit in the copper and the gold,
mm-hmm.
rather than the zinc.
Interesting. Now, the metallurgy. Importantly, I understand the gold reports of the copper column. Is that right? Or would report to the copper column, I should say.
Correct. We followed up with very detailed metallurgical test work after initial work that was done by the previous owners that demonstrated very high recoveries. But all of that work sort of ended up with all of the metals in one concentrate, in a bulk concentrate.
Mm.
What we needed to know is, was it possible, first of all, is to end up with the high recoveries and also end up with a copper and a zinc concentrate separated, because often you end up with a lot of of loss in separating those concentrates, and we don't see that. We see still very high recoveries, around 95% for all the metals. But the most important issue that we followed up on is that we wanted to know where the gold and the silver reported, because zinc concentrates are an issue. In selling zinc to zinc smelters, you don't get paid for gold in the zinc.
Mm.
And I can say that about 94% of the gold and 86% of the silver report into the copper concentrate, which is a very important issue.
For sure. Okay. So, William, tell us about the initial plans on listing. I take it there's going to be heaps of infill, extensional drilling, that sort of work initially?
Yes, so the idea is what we've designed is an extensive surface exploration program across the whole of the tenements,
mm-hmm.
because there is a lot of other opportunity within the tenements to increase the knowledge of those tenements. But specifically at Sabana Blanca, we've designed 15,000 meter infill and step out drilling program to bring all of that mineralization that has been identified to account, and obviously into a maiden JORC resource.
Right. Okay.
There are three other drill-ready targets within that package that we'll obviously be testing too.
Because everyone tells us that VMS deposits tend to occur in clusters. No reason why it would be any different in this part of the world.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, as I said, you know, we were really seeing the development of seven lenses within just within the confines of the Sabana Blanca Stringer Zone. And we know from just up the road, there's a mine, which is a VMS, high-grade VMS mine called El Roble. It's owned by a company called Atico Mining, which is TSX listed. Been operating for almost 50 years. And very few of their lenses that they've mined were actually exposed at surface. Most of them have been blind as they've gone down and mined down the those lenses. So as a starting point, we know that we can see already see seven, but as we drill this thing out, we would believe that both at Sabana Blanca and at these other targets that we're going to see blind lenses formed within you know, within the system. So so there's still tremendous upside within the system to find further lenses, high grade lenses.
So William, Colombia, I would argue that it's not well known amongst Aussie mining investors, even though companies like BHP and South 32 have been there for years. What's the mining investment climate like for foreign investors coming into the mining sector there?
Look, Barry, it's improved substantially over the last probably sort of 10 years or so. Colombia has generally been, you know, fairly stable over the last 25 years or so, but it's had a stable government. And it is now recognized through the Fraser Institute as the number one destination in South America for mining investment. And is, I think, ranked number five in the world for prospectivity. And I think probably mainly because it's been underexplored because of its history. And that's been the opportunity. So there are a lot of big companies there. AngloGold Ashanti have got some very big deposits there. As you mentioned, BHP is there. Glencore's there in a big way in the coal mining industry. But it is a it's quite a fledgling industry from the copper point of view, not so much from the gold point of view, in that historically there's been a lot of artisanal mining, although not you know, not mining as we would know it in Australia, you know, in a sort of an organized sense. But just recently, a company called Continental Gold, which was taken over by Zijin, brought on stream a 300,000 ounce a year underground mine that is now in production. And so the environment is changing somewhat in Colombia, and people are recognizing that because of its history of underexploration, there is tremendous opportunity. And so it's a good time to be there.
I understand as part of the Fraser Institute has zeroed in on it, obviously, but part of the explanation for the high rankings is that the country or the government has actually induced special, what you'd call, tax regions to encourage investment, to put the past behind and get on with things. And your project actually sits in one of those, so there will be some tax benefits operating in that part of the world. Is that right?
Yeah, it's called the Zomac tax benefits, and it focuses on those municipalities that were most affected by the by its past. And what that allows is that the company and the municipality hold back 50% of the corporate tax for social and infrastructure work within the municipality. And that's an enormous incentive for those municipalities to basically get behind development in those municipalities, because they will they are going to benefit.
Okay, yeah, good move. Okay, so how do you go about operating on the ground there? You've obviously got Latin American experience, but do you have a local team, local management running the show?
Yeah, so in purchasing the project, we actually purchased the country subsidiary of New Range when we purchased the project. And so we inherited the team that was already on the ground there, which includes sort of legal, administrative, and technical ability. So we have an ability to hit the ground running.
So these obviously they know their way around through the legal and
the, people are well versed.
So we are in the pre-IPO. It's not far off, but I was assuming there is a maiden resource next year. I was just wondering, can you give investors a bit of a rough feel for when you might progress into a PFS, DFS, you know, final investment decision, and perhaps scope out a potential annual production scenario at this stage?
Well, as I said, we're in 2022. We should complete all the drilling that we require, plus a resource estimate, and push the button on a scoping study. And we'd want to do a scoping study to make sure that we were looking at the best opportunity, whether it was the lower grade massive operation or the higher grade lower tonnage operation. From a company point of view, obviously that. The higher grade, lower tonnage is attractive because of the much lower capital costs that would be required, and obviously company of our size be well within our means to do. But certainly in 2023 we would expect then to have, given that that everything's gone according to plan, sometime towards the back end of 2023 we would be within a feasibility study mode, having been able to then complete the drilling and define exactly what development option we were going to take.
Yeah, okay. Now, obviously, you've been a fan of copper for a while, but things have changed in the last 12 months or so, where everyone's talking about this supply deficit opening up in 2025 because of the EV revolution, or the electrification of everything in the world, essentially. So you could be nicely timed there in terms of first production, but I'm going to ask the Dorothy Dixer here. You're obviously a fan of copper outlook.
Oh, look, I think the copper outlook is pretty robust, and you only have to look at today. I mean, as we stand here today, LME and NYMEX warehouses have got about 2 days consumption. World consumption sitting in them. And generally, the view has always been that there should be 6 weeks of consumption sitting in those warehouses, which is telling you that there's obviously a supply issue here. And that's why we've seen the copper price rise over the last 6 or 7 months, as we have seen,
Okay. And one thing we don't have on the ASX is near-term copper developers. So do you see, just in a broad sense, do you see yourself more as a copper developer or a copper explorer at this stage?
Oh, no, we would be seeing ourselves as a copper developer. We've got a very clear understanding of what we believe this thing is, and it's now a matter of just, putting the final touches to the knowledge base of the deposit, exactly how it performs and where it goes, and then getting into the studies and getting those studies done.
There's not too many ASX juniors operating in Colombia. I was just wondering, and obviously the initial focus will be on getting El Dovio into production, but do you expect to see other project opportunities potentially coming forward once you build up your reputation and name in Colombia?
Absolutely. We're pretty excited about the fact that we're on the ground there. We have our ear to the ground. In this phase of listing and getting ourselves up and running, we're obviously just marking a bit of time. But there are some tremendous opportunities out there in Colombia and in that region. And we certainly will be taking advantage of those opportunities as we go forward.
Excellent. Okay. All right. There we go, folks. An interesting addition coming up in the copper gold space, one with near-term production potential to capture those bumper prices analysts are forecasting for copper, which are actually here now. But I think we're, 440, 450 a pound. And Goldman Sachs the other day was saying 580 a pound by 2025. So interesting times. So with that, William, thanks for your time today. Good luck with all. We'll be watching with interest.
Thank you, Barry.
This episode of the Explorers Podcast was sponsored by RM Corporate Finance, an active participant in emerging companies around the globe.